It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to Let's Talk. I am your host, Brian Pettaway. Thank you for joining me this Sunday morning, giving me your hour. I really appreciate it. Today, I'm going to bring back a guest that I had on the show 2 weeks ago and do a follow-up show to that interview because I got a lot of calls and a lot of emails in reference to what she was telling me and telling us on that show. And it appeared to a lot of listeners, and I'm not going to kid you, myself as well, that the good doctor was saying that drugs, weight loss drugs, is a better and more effective way to lose weight than diet, exercise, and nutrition. I mean, listen, I have had a transgender guest, I've had a polyamorous guest, I've had the governor, I've had all kinds of people on my show that have garnered all kinds of comments, right? But I have never gotten as many comments about any show as I've gotten about this one. Clearly, health and nutrition, diet, exercise, weight loss, drugs are a very, very hot item right now. So I want to bring her back, and she's eager. To her credit, she's eager to come back and explain exactly what she was trying to say, if we heard it wrong. I've also got the Petty here today. He's going to talk all things sports, and this time of the year, there's a million things going on in the sports world, trades, all these things, free agency. So he's going to give us the rundown of what's going on in the sports world. But first, you've got me, of course, and I'm going to talk to you about news that's gone on this past week. And trust me, there's been so much going on in this country this past 2 weeks, this past week in particular, that I don't even know where to start. But I hope you're feeling great, because I'm feeling great, and I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. All right, as I always do, and today is no different, I'm going to start with news in Baltimore, because, well, that's where we are. And Fox 45 is reporting that in the wake of a scathing Baltimore IG report detailing wide safety concerns inside the Department of Public Works, there's still been no calls for any resignations, and there's been no repercussions. Which calls into question if anybody who was responsible for these lapses in worker environment conditions and safety is going to ever be held accountable. Now remember, in the Baltimore City Inspector General report, the IG accused workers of being deprived of air conditioning, ice, and even water. And these employees of the Department of Public Works were being deprived of these things, the things that they actually really needed, during a summer where the heat index reached record high temperatures. I mean, it's pretty bad. In fact, the images of the IG's report included disheveled and dirty bathrooms, locker rooms, and at one location, even toilet paper was withheld from staff. The report also goes on to say that at least one of the workers fainted from heat exhaustion, and it concludes with calls for swift action from the mayor. The mayor, Brandon Scott, however, appears to be more focused on a long-term solution. In a press conference that the mayor held on Wednesday, he said, you can't go and plug window units up randomly if the electricity infrastructure in that facility can't handle it. The mayor continues to point to a 3-year, $20 million project to upgrade and repair DPW's outdated facilities instead of pushing for immediate accountability, which is a concern for employees there who say not only is the environment physically dangerous, but it's a toxic environment as well where there's no accountability for any of the lapses that occur within the workplace. It's been now 5 days since the IG's latest report was released, and the DPW says they're still working on a detailed response to address the Inspector General's findings. Okay, it's time to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is what's gone on in politics this past week. President Biden has decided not to run for re-election. He has turned over the reins of the Democratic nominee to Vice President Kamala Harris, who's been endorsed by pretty much everybody in the Democratic Party. Well, those people that that matter. It's been reported that Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Barack Obama, you know, the old guard, the top three in the Democratic Party, with their power and influence, convinced Joe Biden that he could not win an election against Donald Trump. They did not want him debating Donald Trump in September as it was scheduled. And the odd thing is that since Kamala Harris has been named the Democratic nominee, Donald Trump has now dropped out of that debate. He's not going to be debating her, which tells you everything you really need to know about Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump being Donald Trump. He's a bully. He felt that President Biden was weak. He felt like he saw his weakness and he was going to debate him because he knew, or at least thought in his mind, and I'm sure had been told by everyone on his side, that he could win a debate against Biden right now. But as soon as he has a formidable opponent, one that can speak on the policies clearly and strong, well, like a bully, he ran away. Which is really unfortunate, because I didn't just want to see how poorly Donald would do. I really wanted to see how strong and confident and comfortable Kamala Harris is. I wanted the world to see that, like most of us believe, that she is more than capable of running this country, and far more capable than the Donald. President Biden spoke from the Oval Office last week, giving his first speech after deciding not to run for re-election. And this is what he said.
I'd like to thank our great Vice President Kamala Harris. She's experienced, she's tough, she's capable. She's been an incredible partner to me and a leader for our country. Now the choice is up to you, the American people.
You know, I listened to the speech, and it was obvious that he was reading, but he still got tripped up on some things. And, you know, I believe that President Biden has all of his faculties. I believe that he can think clearly. I just don't believe that he can speak clearly what he's thinking. I think that his mind works much faster than his mouth. His mouth does not formulate words the way that they used to. And debating and addressing a nation is a speaking man's game. So the majority of Democrats that I've spoken to believe that he's made the right decision. I believe that he's made the right decision. And it's proven by the amount of energy that's been injected into the Democratic Party. I mean, it's palpable. You can feel the excitement since Kamala Harris has come on board. Not only that, but she's raising ungodly amounts of money in record-breaking time. Now, of course, the right, you know, they're doing everything that they can to discredit her. They're throwing everything up against the wall. They're putting up Photoshop pictures of her and whoever, Epstein and all these kinds of people. And that just lets you know that they're scrambling, that they're nervous, that they're afraid. And that's exactly what the Democratic Party wants them to be. Now, I'm very eager to see what's going to happen at the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, where I was nervous before. I'm excited for it now, and I'm eager for the convention to happen. I think it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be uplifting. And I think that it's going to drive in a lot of swing voters, people who are on the fence about who they were going to vote for. I hope that it does anyway. So we'll see. The other big thing that has happened is that Donald Trump has picked his running mate. And he picked a very interesting guy. And I think he may be regretting it at this point because he picked a guy, J.D. Vance. And J.D. Vance says things like this.
Without children, childless, cat ladies.
We're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made. And so they want to make the rest of the country miserable, too. If you look at Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, AOC, the entire future of the Democrats is controlled by people without children.
And those comments have come back to bite him and Trump because people like Jennifer Aniston and, of course, Taylor Swift are women with cats and no children. And Taylor Swift is already talking to all of her Swifties about J.D. Vance and who not to vote for. And that is a significant amount of people. But that's not the thing that's weird to me. The thing that's really, really crazy to me is he does what a lot of these people who were never Trumpers have done. He's done a completely 180. He's now a complete Trump fan. But just a few short years ago, he was saying things like this about Trump.
There is definitely an element of Donald Trump's support that has its basis in racism or xenophobia.
And now he's saying things like this.
Mr. Vance, we do begin with you. You've admitted you've changed your mind on Donald Trump, but in the past you've said, quote, I'm a never Trump guy, quote, my God, what an idiot, and quote, God wants better of us. All statements you have either said or tweeted about Donald Trump at some point. The question, you have 60 seconds, why should Trump voters, Trump supporters vote for you?
Yeah, look, I mean, all of us say stupid things, and I happen to say stupid things very publicly. I've been very public about the fact that I voted for the president in 2020, that I was wrong about the president back in 2015, 2016, and that he's been the greatest president of my lifetime.
Apparently, backpedaling is a superpower in the Republican Party. We've seen Ted Cruz do it like no one else has ever done it before. We've seen Nikki Haley recently do it, and now we see J.D. Vance do it. And they all do the same thing. They all do a 180. Like, it's not like they liked him kind of and then warmed up to him. They really disliked this guy. And they did it publicly, said things publicly about him. And then all of a sudden, boom, just like that, they love him. But here's the problem with J.D. Vance for Trump. He says things that are polarizing. He says things that are divisive. He says things that even the Trump base is having a hard time swallowing. And we may see him replaced before September 5th. So look, I don't know about you guys, but for me, this election has gotten far more interesting and far more competitive than it was a week ago, and a lot more energized. So I'm very eager to see what happens during the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, and I'm very eager to see what happens on Election Day. And finally this week, a video emerged of 36-year-old Sonya Massey, a black woman who was killed by a white cop in Springfield, Illinois. The video is very hard to watch, and it's very sad. And it has many, many people outraged. Because when you watch this video, you see that there's no reason in the world, no reason why this woman should have been shot.
Okay. Your ID. One task at a time. So let's do an ID, and then you can dig around for your paperwork.
I don't know where my ID is.
You see that stack right there, maybe?
Okay. 1 second.
Just check on her.
I need this.
No, we don't need a fire while we're here.
Right. Okay.
Don't worry.
Where are you going?
Huh?
Now, unless you see the video, it's kind of hard to understand from that audio what happened, but it happened really fast. It really escalated that quickly. Basically, Sean Grayson's, I guess, defense is that he was afraid that Sonya Massey was going to throw a hot boiling water on him. But you have to understand that he was 4 feet away from her initially, and he's the one that got closer to her. If it was truly a threat to him, why was he not backing up? The other thing is why did he draw his gun so quickly? As soon as she said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus," the second time, he put his hand on his gun and he drew down on her. She crouched down and he came around the corner of the counter that was separating the two, closing the distance even more. And based on his explanation as to why he shot her, at that point he still believes that she has the weapon, which is the hot boiling water. Why are you getting closer to her if you feel threatened by what she has in her hand? It makes no sense. But at that point, as he's closing the distance, from a crouching position, she looks like she raises her hand that has the pot in it. At which point, he fires 3 times, saying, "Drop the effing pot, drop the effing pot." Even after she's been struck and is on the floor, he's still screaming 2 more times, "Drop the effing pot." The truth is she was never a threat. And when his sergeant came to get the SITREP, the situation report, he asked Grayson, "Where's her gun?" Thinking that Sonya Massey must have had a gun or a knife or something to cause her to be shot. And Grayson said, "She didn't have a gun. She came at me with a boiling pot of water." And you could see the sergeant's demeanor change. Like, you idiot. And so when Grayson said, "Do you want me to tell you what happened?" The sergeant says, "No, just go outside." He was disgusted. You could tell. And he knew that this was going to be a big thing. And it is a big thing. And it should be a big thing. So now after Grayson has already shot and killed Sonya Massey, she's laying on the floor bleeding, paramedics are helping her, and the sergeant has already been disgusted and tells him to go outside. Massey comes outside amongst all of his peers. There's a lot of police personnel there. And someone asks him if he's okay. And this is what he says.
"Yeah, I'm good. This fucking bitch is crazy."
Now, he just shot a woman in the head and killed her. She's bleeding out on the floor of that house. And when he's asked by his fellow officers if he's okay, he says, "Yes, I'm good. The effing bee is crazy." Look, Sean Grayson has been fired from 6 different departments in 4 years. He was discharged from the Army because of DUIs. He was not a good man. And I don't know if Sonya Massey saw it in him. Maybe that's why she said, "I rebuke you in the name of Jesus." I don't know. But something triggered him, and it wasn't that boiling pot of water. He was just not a good man. There's no reason in the world, after 6 places you've been unsuccessfully in law enforcement, should somebody else give you a badge and a gun. So there's going to be a lot behind this case. Not only is Sean Massey on trial, and he is in jail, having been charged with first-degree murder. He cannot get a bond, so he's locked up until the trial starts. But the Saginaw Sheriff's Department in Springfield, Illinois, is also on trial. Because someone did not do their job. Either they didn't do their due diligence in checking out his background, or they knew his background and just didn't care. Either way, somebody in that department is going to pay for this. Don't know much about history. All right, it is time for This Day in History, one of my favorite segments of the show. And I'm going to give you 3 history facts based on what happened on this date, July 28th, throughout our history. Using the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Francis Ferdinand as a pretext to present Serbia with an unacceptable ultimatum, Austria declared war on that Slavic country, sparking World War I on this day, July 28, 1914. Also, an earthquake in the industrial city of Tangshan, China, killed more than 240,000 people. It is, to this day, the worst earthquake or natural disaster that China has ever suffered, and it happened on this day, July 28, 1976. And lastly, but certainly not the least, the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which granted citizenship and equal civil and legal rights to African Americans and slaves who had been emancipated after the Civil War, was signed and entered into the books on this day, July 28, 1868. All right, well, there you have it. There are the three history facts for this day throughout history that I found interesting. You know, maybe a little exciting too. Hope you enjoyed them. All right, it is time to get into the meat and potatoes of today's show, the topic. And I'm bringing Dr. Catherine Toomer back, the health and wellness expert who I invited onto the show to help me to discuss weight loss drugs. I didn't know a whole lot about them, and I wanted her to discuss with me the health risks, if there are any, in taking these for a long term, for a long period of time. The answers that I received, I was not expecting. And clearly, it surprised you guys because the amount of comments, emails, calls that I got in reference to the show was more than any other show that I have done. It sounded like to a lot of you, and to me a little bit too, that she was saying that drugs were the best way and the easiest and healthiest way to lose weight and to keep it off. I received emails saying that the only reason she was saying that is because she's a doctor and she gets paid to push drugs on people and to have them use them forever. And, you know, I didn't have the answers. So I called the good doctor and I asked her to come back on the show and to explain herself and explain exactly what we heard. Well, she agreed to come on to the show. She was eager to do it, actually. And I am so happy that she was. All right. Well, without further ado, let's talk with Dr. Catherine Toomer. All right, let's talk, family. Please welcome back to the show, Dr. Catherine Toomer. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You know, I told you at the end of the last show that when I needed some help or some answers, I would call you in the future. I had no idea I'd be calling you back this quickly.
Well, when I listened back to the broadcast, I figured you'd be calling sooner.
Yeah, it was crazy. I've had all kinds of guests on the show, and some of them garner more responses and comments than others, but I've never had the response or comments that I've had from the show that you and I did in the interview that we had. And People were really concerned about the things that you were saying. I don't know if they misheard, misconstrued, or misunderstood what you were saying, but a lot of them felt like you were saying that instead of living a healthy life as far as diet, nutrition, and exercise, take a drug. And so I'm not sure if that's what you meant. If you remember me on the show with you, I was kind of like, huh? But to your credit, you were eager to come on and explain exactly what you meant. So take it away.
All right. Well, partly, I mean, I was asked to come on the show to talk about GLP-1 medications. So It wasn't as if I was just talking about them because I was advocating for them. Now, the reason it may have come off as though I was promoting them over healthy lifestyle was because I was trying to explain why they work and why it's necessary for some people to use them. Now, lifestyle in medicine across the board is always important. You always maximize your diet and your exercise for whatever your disease state is,
right?
Especially for weight loss. But I was trying to dispel the myth that all you have to do is exercise and eat a certain way. For some people, that just isn't possible. And that's why these medications work. And that's why we treat diabetes. It's why we treat hypertension. It's why we treat thyroid issues, is because they're simply people who need treatment on top of their lifestyle issues. And so what I was also trying to explain was that those who are able to do what they need to in order to get healthy just through diet and exercise, that they are genetically blessed. Not everybody has that. Just as some of us get diabetes, some of us get hypertension, and other people don't, our genes do lead us to places in our health that sometimes requires medication to reverse. And that was basically what I was trying to say.
Okay. Now, obviously, after the show, I talked to a lot of people. And they felt like, and I got to be honest, I kind of felt the same way before we even had the first conversation, that a lot of the drugs that are on the market now that are byproducts of, you know, with the weight loss being a byproduct of what it was initially for, like Ozempic, people are now taking shortcuts, right? They consider it a shortcut. People who can lose weight through diet and exercise are using Ozempic because they don't have to do that and they still have appetite suppression and they don't have to work out. They just lose the weight. I know that when you and I spoke, I'd mentioned that that there seemed to be a shortage of some of these drugs for people who actually need it, an upward trend of people using the drug just for weight loss. Have you not seen that? Have you not read that?
Well, this is the thing. I think it's a misconception that they're using it for weight loss. Now, yes, they want to lose weight. And yes, thinness is a currency in this country. And yes, people want that currency. However, biologically, the medication really works because there's an underlying metabolic issue going on. And like I mentioned, even then, if you take Tylenol for a headache you don't have, that Tylenol does nothing. It's the same thing with these medications. They suppress appetite mainly because of the work they do in the brain. So our brain, every cell in our body has receptors. And every cell in our body has receptors that help regulate blood sugar. And so when people have difficulty regulating their blood sugar, these medications are what help, and that's what suppresses appetite. Now, that doesn't say that that's the... Now, the issue we do run into is that there are those people who don't do what they're supposed to do. And this has been the case always with diet culture. Mm-hmm. There's always been people who have abused the process, who have hacked the system, and have used it to their advantage. Now, what I'm talking about is healthy weight loss. And healthy weight loss means that, yes, you use the medication to correct a metabolic problem, but you also eat a certain way so that you maximize your nutrition and you also maximize your success by building muscle. Without building muscle, no weight loss process is a healthy process.
Right. And I think that's a very important part. And I will say, I know someone whose mother has been taking Ozempic. This person is very concerned about, you know, her mother's condition, the way she looks, because it's not a healthy weight loss. It's a drastic weight loss, but it's not a healthy one. And so now she's really concerned, is Ozempic really a healthy way to lose weight? I'm not sure. You say yes.
Yes, it is a healthy way to lose weight. And this is, again, it's a healthy way of correcting a metabolic process that weight loss is a side effect of that process.
Okay.
And so the problem you run into is that the pharmaceutical companies who created these medications have fed into this weight loss frenzy, when really what they're doing is they're, I'm actually moving because I can hear a noise coming towards my window.
Okay.
One of the things that this medication does is it corrects a metabolic process and results in weight loss. Like, again, the problem we run into is that there are people who have always abused processes, always tried to abuse the system to be thin. Most people who do that, they've always been on some kind of diet. They've always been doing something to try and get their weight down. And now they just have another tool. Okay. And so it's really important for doctors who prescribe these to monitor closely and to make sure that people are using these medications appropriately. So in a case like this, I would have already cut back on her medication, assuming that her numbers were fine. Now, what we decide someone should or shouldn't look like isn't necessarily a reason to change their medication. If they're diabetic, if they have, you know, their hemoglobin A1C is really high and the medication brings it down and their weight comes down with it, well then, you know, just because we don't like the way they look doesn't mean they're necessarily unhealthy.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Now you founded Total Weight Care Clinic, right? The foundation
Institute.
Institute. Okay, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And you do see people who come to you who are overweight, I assume.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone like me, who I said on the last show, that what my body does what I tell it to do. Like, if I work mm-hmm. out and I eat right, I'll lose weight, I'll be healthy, I'll have muscle development, and I look great, I fit my clothes well. If I lay mm-hmm. on the couch and don't do anything, and I'm, you know, mm-hmm. sedentary most of the time, I gain weight. I gain belly mm-hmm. weight, I gain waist weight, leg weight, face weight, all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I come to you, and I say, hey, Doc, listen, I'm 30 pounds heavier than I should be, mm-hmm. right? You say, and my AC1, my A1C is elevated, and mm-hmm. my blood pressure is elevated. You mm-hmm. say to me, what? Do you prescribe me a drug, or do you prescribe nutrition and diet information?
All of the above.
All of the above.
And the reason is that if your A1C is elevated, what that means is you have a metabolic process that your muscle is going to be fighting against in order to build. So what the best course of action, like we do with all disease, you know, we treat the disease, the acute disease first. And then we say, okay, now that we've treated this and we're getting you back to homeostasis where your body really likes to be and healthy, we've got to do this to keep you there. And so it's all of the above. We don't allow people to walk around in a disease state, no matter what that disease state is. And with an A1C that's elevated, what that tells me is there is a disease, underlying disease process going on that needs to be addressed. So the weight gain is secondary. It's the disease process that's the focus. What happens to your weight is secondary.
The weight is a byproduct of the lifestyle that I lead, right? And so changing my lifestyle is not, I'm just trying to figure out, because I mentioned on the last show that when I have gone to the doctor, mm-hmm. and I have people who have gone to the doctors who are overweight and who may need medication at that time and have put on a drug, the doctor said to them, you know, you don't want to be on this all the time. And the way to get off of these drugs is to get your weight down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you said that being on the drug for a lifetime is okay. That's not okay. The motivation.
So again, it's only okay if there's something underlying being treated. So it's not, and I did say right at the beginning, we are not treating weight loss.
Okay.
We are treating the underlying metabolic cause of weight gain. And that underlying metabolic cause of weight gain can be dangerous on so many other organ systems that we don't just let it continue without doing something about it. Now, if someone just says, I am 10 pounds overweight and I, you know, they don't have hypertension, they don't have, you know, an A1C issue, they don't have anything, the first thing we say is, you know, do you really, really, really feel you need these medications? Now, in a case like that, you know, where there's no other metabolic or medical issue going on, we won't jump straight to medication. Never have.
Okay. I do know someone that I was close to who mm-hmm. didn't have hypertension, didn't mm-hmm. have an elevated A1C, but mm-hmm. she wanted to lose weight because, you know, she's a media personality. And mm-hmm. so she was getting shots once a month,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. instead of the working out and changing the diet, and did lose weight, you know, mm-hmm. like 20, 25 pounds.
You're misrepresenting what happened.
Okay.
She didn't do that instead of losing weight. She did that to treat the disease that she had that caused her to gain weight. There's a difference. And the problem is that we keep misrepresenting it, why people are overweight, why people are obese. When you have a underlying metabolic reason, it drives your appetite, it drives your food choices, it drives what happens to food when you eat it. It takes food that you've eaten and it shifts it to fat rather than fuel. That is a genetic thing. That's a genetic component. And some people simply need help. Now, I say it like this. Someone says, all right, for you to be well, you've got to push this boulder up a hill.
Right.
So you're pushing this boulder and you're pushing and you're pushing and you're pushing and you're getting some progress and you're pushing. And then someone comes along and says, you know, we have a tractor that can help you pull it up. So you use the tractor. Does that make you cheating? Because you're using an efficient tool to get the same result. Because in any other time in our lives, when we use a tool to make something more efficient, we call it progress, except when we're treating people who are overweight and obese.
Ugh, that's a tough one for me. I'm not sure if I agree with the analogy. It's a tough one for me. Because...
So we should let people suffer and let their metabolic systems run haywire and allow their body organs to fight against this.
No.
Instead of helping them first.
No. I'm not suggesting that at all. I just don't know if I agree with everyone that is overweight, is predisposed for that, or genetically, I guess, cursed.
Well, if they didn't, if they weren't, the medication wouldn't work. The medication only works on a molecular cellular level. The only time that it works on a mechanical level, which would work on anybody, is the slowing of the gastric emptying. That does lend itself to feeling full faster, so you tend to eat less. That is true. But anyone who has an eating disorder or anything else can override that, one. And two, that's a temporary side effect.
What, the weight loss?
It only works if there is a derangement in how fat is made in the body. That's the only time it works. It doesn't work for anything else or on anyone else.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, so it's basically how there's a genetic component, for example, to cancer treatment. There's this, you can take the exact same drug, give it to two different people with the exact same cancer, but it will only work for one and not the other, because their genes determine what happens with that medication in the body. Same thing with these. Just like you can give two people with hypertension the same medication, but it will work for one person and not the other, and you have to use a different medication for the other person. And that reason, again, is because of genetic component. It's exactly the same thing. Now, there's other, like, even with hypertension, you can cut back on salt to help. You can exercise to help. You can do lots of things to help. But we don't allow people to walk around with stroke risks, kidney disease risks, heart attack risks, until they do those things. We treat it first, and then we help them. And this is no different. We know that losing anywhere from 5 to 10% of body fat in the body exponentially increases health, regardless of any other behaviors.
Okay.
And so we don't allow people to walk around unhealthy just because it's obesity.
Once that person loses the weight, once their A1C is where it's supposed to be, and their and their blood pressure is now okay, do we take them off the drug, or do we keep them on the drug?
Okay, so if their A1C is elevated, they're in a disease state.
Correct.
If their blood pressure is elevated, they're in a disease state.
Right.
That disease doesn't go away just because you've controlled the symptoms of that disease.
Okay.
Now, for some people, they can reset. And this is what I always tell people. What happens next is determined by how much muscle you build. And so if you, you know, if the more muscle you build, the better you will be, the more independent you'll be later in life, your mobility will be affected, and your metabolic process will get to the best it can. Now, if you still need medication to stay in a normal state, then that's okay, but you probably won't need as much. And even with these medications, when someone gets to maintenance, they're never on the same amount.
Okay.
We drop the dose, or we extend the frequency. So instead of taking it once a week at the highest dose, we may drop them to half the dose, or half the dose every 2 weeks, or even once a month, while we work on other things to help with the process. So again, the medications are just one of many tools. And yes, I am a proponent of using all tools at your disposal, and to be as efficient with those tools as possible. But you cannot ignore all the others.
No. And listen, I don't disagree that if people are diseased or ill, and there's a drug to help them with that, then absolutely.
Then so you have to agree that obesity is a disease first before you agree that these medications should be used.
I agree that obesity is a disease. I mean, I do. But I also agree and I think this is where we disagree with, you're the doctor, you're the expert, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that everyone who is obese is predisposed to be that way or is genetically cursed to be that way. I do believe that if you discipline yourself and you eat right, you eat properly, not overeat, and you have diet and nutrition in your life and you lead a, that many people will not need these drugs. They won't fall into these categories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I wouldn't say most, but I said to say, yes, that is true. So this is what I said even before, biopsychosocial. You have to look at all three. So yes, you have people who have a genetic component, and that's where these medications work. Now you also have those people who have a psychosocial component. Now you have people who are on medications, for example, that drive their weight up. Antipsychotics will do this. Steroids will do this. Or other diseases like hypothyroidism will do this, that, you know, and so you end up in a situation where you are obese. Then you have the social, and you have, you know, mood disorders, which also lend themselves to eating a certain way for your body, you know, your body to react a certain way to food when you've eaten them.
Right.
But then you have the social. These are behaviors that are learned from childhood. They're patterns that are learned from childhood. And those, so you may have people in that category who are obese, who, you know, did not become obese for genetic reasons, but it's still familial. It still came up through their family. And so it's hard to say which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Right.
And so with those people, yes, some of them may not have a genetic component to their metabolic issues. But once they have those metabolic issues, we don't ignore them. And so again, do we say, are you obese because you ate yourself there and now you have diabetes? Or did you become obese because you had diabetes and your body just made fat very efficiently when you ate? Do we care? If obesity is what's killing someone, why do we care how they got there if we have a way of pulling them back into a healthy place while we work on all health, not just biologic health, but psychological health and social health as well? Because when someone is obese in this society, it affects them socially, it affects them psychologically. And those psychological and social things snowball into other things, self-esteem issues, depression, you know, and so it puts people in a position where they're easily manipulated, they're easily abused. You know, so there's all these things that feed into it, and we just aren't going to let people suffer for the sake of suffering because somebody said you shouldn't have gotten there in the first place.
So here's the question I'm going to ask, and this mm-hmm. may sound like a very ignorant question, and I apologize in advance.
All right, here we go.
If it's truly a chemical thing, a genetic thing with most obesities and a disease in that regard, mm-hmm. that we really don't have control of, a lot of us, why is America...
No, I didn't say they don't have control.
Okay.
I just said that it's just different. It just is harder for some people. It's no different than having two people having to take a math test. Some people are just better at math. You know, it's like everyone has something that they're predisposed for.
Right.
And so you're telling me if you have two people who have to take a test, you got two people who, you know, are taking this math test, should we not allow the person who's not as good at math, should we not allow them to have a tutor?
No, we absolutely should. If a person is having problems seeing, you should wear glasses. If a person is having a hard, doesn't have a leg, you should have a prosthetic.
They should just study harder. Right. They should just study more and study harder.
I mean, that helps.
And then they would be in the same place as the person who's really good naturally.
Well, no, that won't happen, right? Because things will click faster.
But why not?
Because some people get math, some people don't. They just have to try harder. I agree with that.
And so they should just try harder, so they shouldn't be allowed to have a tutor because they aren't trying hard enough.
Of course they should be allowed to have a tutor.
Okay, so how is this different?
Well, it's different because...
How is it different that behavior in one place... If behavior can change the outcome in one place and it can change the outcome in the other, and people are working on both sides, because it's an assumption that people aren't working. That's one of the problems we have running into. You're assuming people are not trying.
Well, but I mean, I know people who aren't trying. They're using it instead of trying. It takes discipline and patience.
But I mean, really, but also, there are a whole lot of people who are using it who aren't telling you because of the prejudice that's coming along with the attitude about these medications. So yes, there are some people who are out there who are taking it. They're just like, there's people out there taking blood pressure medication when they could easily just stop eating salt and their blood pressure would come down.
So let me ask you a question. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? Because we're all human beings, no matter where we are. Mm-hmm. Why is America the fattest country in the world? Why is that?
Ask yourself the question, biopsychosocial. So one of the reasons is we have biological issues because of how our food is produced.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have what are considered bioidentical additives to our food that make our body, it makes it harder for our body to process what we eat and use it properly to extract the nutrients. And when our body can't extract nutrients and can't figure out what to do with what we're eating, it stores it as fat until it can figure it out. So that's one. Then you have the psychosocial. We're in a country where there is a lot of stress.
Right.
Where, you know, just economically, the way, you know, businesses are run, the way employment is done, it just puts people in a situation where they're under perpetual stress. Well, perpetual stress raises cortisol level.
Right.
Cortisol levels drive people towards diabetes. And so what happens, again, when under stress, what happens to food in the body changes. When you eat food under stress, you're more likely to make fat out of that food than to make fuel. And then you have the social reasons. Everything we do in this country is around food and alcohol. All celebrations.
So
we're celebrating around food. The food itself is prepared in a way so that it makes us gain weight. It's using products that our body can't process. And then, you know, and we're under a lot of stress on top of it. So it's a multifactorial cause and there's a multifactorial solution. And when you're in a situation where you can get good food and you can afford it, and when you can exercise in a way that's safe and your body's responsive to it, then of course, I mean, we always, for every chronic disease, say, these are the things you need to do to help this along, to help your process.
Okay.
We're not saying because this is obesity, because people are overweight, we're giving them an excuse not to do these things. No. Anyone who works with anyone, in weight loss will tell you that we still harp heavily on lifestyle. But again, there's always going to be those people who are going to abuse the process. And there are always going to be those people. And one of the issues we're also running into is that there are a lot of people getting access to the medications without going through the proper experts who can help them with the whole process. And so all they're doing is taking medication. So when you say someone's taking Ozempic for weight loss, that tells me right there that either they're not taking Ozempic, they're taking something else, or they're getting their Ozempic not through a doctor and not through insurance.
Right.
Because you cannot get Ozempic for weight loss anymore. You can only get Ozempic for diabetes. Now you can get Wegovy for weight loss, but okay, not Ozempic. But we tend to call all of the medications Ozempic now, like Kleenex or Band-Aid.
Right. Yeah, all of it. And you don't know of any dangerous side effects, that long-standing side effects to any of these drugs that's been discovered, right?
No. I mean, the only long-standing side effects, we would have seen them in diabetics already.
Okay.
And we're not.
Okay.
The side effects we're seeing are also seen with diabetics. So we can't say if the medications are causing it or if it's just an uncontrolled diabetes for years of uncontrolled diabetes that caused it. But there are some things that are alarming. Pancreatitis is one. And pancreatitis is caused most commonly by gallstones.
Okay.
And so gallstones occur when you have rapid weight loss. So of course, when you have rapid weight loss and you get a gallstone, you can get the pancreatitis. So since the medication lends itself to rapid weight loss, they're connected. It's not subtle. The only way someone's going to get pancreatitis from these medications is if they ignore the symptoms when they're early on and they don't report them to their doctor.
What are some of the symptoms?
The symptoms are severe nausea.
Okay.
It starts off with severe nausea, then vomiting, like worsening nausea. Now, some the medications can cause low-level nausea anyway, but when it starts getting worse and it starts interfering with life, interfering with the ability to eat, interfering with, you know, work, then that's the time to say, okay, this is not a good thing. We need to stop it. If it starts getting worse and worse, then becomes vomiting, then gets worse and worse, then becomes abdominal pain, then gets worse and worse, and then that abdominal pain gets so bad you end up in the hospital, that's about a month in the making.
Okay.
And so people, if you ignore it early on, yes, there are complications. Most of the complications only occur when symptoms are ignored or a doctor's not involved in the care.
Okay.
Or both.
Okay. And that's, you said that that's one thing that's concerning. Is there anything else?
The other would be gastroparesis, or what you hear is it's called like intestinal paralysis, or, you know, your stomach paralysis. Again, the most common cause of that is diabetes, but we do see it worsening with these medications because the medications slow down gut emptying. Again, not subtle.
Okay.
Bad vomiting, extreme pain, you know, debilitating constipation. If those things are ignored, which people tend to do in the name of thinness, then they ignore them and it keeps going and then they end up in a situation. So most of the stories you hear, if you read them carefully, you'll see the person had months of symptoms before they actually had something dangerous happen.
Okay. Okay.
And so they're not subtle. They're not subtle side. Now there is one that we're starting to see, we're getting reports of, is a type of optic nerve damage. That right now they say is sudden onset. But again, we can't tell which came for, again, we can't tell if it's diabetics with it, which also have the same issue,
right,
or if it's the medication. But that's those are being studied right now. And so we may find that there is one that causes a problem with vision.
Wow. Well, I fired some questions at you. You answered every one. But these are questions that were thrown at me. So I figured, you know, it rolls downhill. I had to throw them at you.
Right? I get it. And you know, I've been a physician for 30 years. Right. I have been prescribing these medications for over 10 years, long before anybody cared about them. And so I'm you know, very well versed in how to use them, what they've done. And I can tell you, in the 10 years I've been prescribing them, I've had no complications, not one. And I've had a lot of people lose a significant amount of weight that has completely reversed many of their other diseases. There are, you know, have just improved to the point where, you know, I often have people crying on my appointments, right, thanking me for how much better they feel. But one of the things that I do and I make sure of is that we have, weight loss, obesity treatment, getting people healthy is a multi-pronged approach. And it's not to get anyone to a certain size or a certain weight. It's to get their health to a certain place. And wherever their body goes in that process, it's where it goes. But all those things have to be addressed, not just one.
Awesome. But you do believe... And mm-hmm. exercise and nutrition
and absolutely
healthy eating.
As someone
habits.
Who's lost over 100 pounds, there's no way I could have done that without also, you know, and maintained it now for going on 20 years is, you know, unless, you know, I believe that there's, or unless I was able to do those things. Yes, people can lose weight and they can never do those things. And they can stay on this medication for the rest of their lives. But that still doesn't mean they're healthy. They're losing, you know, they have to maintain muscle. We lose muscle as we get older anyway.
Right.
And so right. It's really, there's things, no matter whether the medication was on board or not, that we should be doing to maintain our health.
Okay.
Eating well, exercising regularly, keeping our stress levels down as best we can, maintaining our social contacts as best we can, and then trying to enjoy life as best we can.
Right.
And so all of those things are important regardless of what medications we need to take or what, you know, diagnoses we have. They're all just really, really important.
I had just for health. I had someone make a comment to me. Actually, it was in an email form. Mm-hmm. B, you're talking, and it says B, which is me. People call me B sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You're speaking to a doctor, and she's going to, of course, pump up the drug situation because she makes money promoting the drug.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
The only people who make money from drugs are the pharmaceutical companies. What may be the case. In fact, it's illegal for us to make money off of prescribing drugs.
Thank you.
It's absolutely illegal.
Okay.
We can get samples for our patients. And unfortunately, what happens when we accept samples for our patients who can't afford medications, the pharmaceutical company lists it as a payment. So because for tax reasons, they have to put an amount on those drugs so that they can get tax deductions for giving us the samples. So if you look up my name, for example, and you look up and see how much, say, Pfizer gave me, it's all in the form of samples, but they list it as dollars.
Got you.
And okay. So that's where people get confused. The other is that, you know, we are trained to treat disease. And we are trained to treat disease using medications. And we are moving away from that. I have always learned, you know, it should be a multi-pronged approach, holistic. I learned in a place where we did use nutrition, even massage or acupuncture.
Okay.
Herbal medications. You know, even myself, I'll drink a tea before I'll take a pill if I can.
Okay.
And so there's many, more and more doctors are coming over to that. And so, no, I do not support these medications because of the drugs I get paid. I do not. But what I do see is the cost of disease on people. And trust me, people are paying a whole lot more for people being overweight and obese in terms of all the other medications that they're paying for, all the other, you know, services that they'll need, all the other things that are, you know, we're paying for than just one drug that takes it all away. Wow. So it actually saves people money. It doesn't cost them.
Okay. Well, listen, you set me straight. I feel a whole lot better. No, I do. I feel a whole lot better.
But I know there are people out there who are still going to say, you know, she's still advocating for these medicines. I'm not advocating for the medicine. What I'm doing is advocating for treatment.
Gotcha.
If someone has an illness or anything that that can use medication to bring them to a healthier state, then I am all for using it in, again, a multi-pronged approach. You can't just do one thing. And if you know someone who's doing just one thing, you know they're not my patient.
Dr. Toomer, thank you so much. I know, literally, I feel better. I'm like, what?
Good.
I really do. So I appreciate you so much coming back so soon. You know, I know you're a busy woman, so to be able to take the time and come on, I really, really appreciate it.
And I would like to say one thing. And you know, I know you get bombarded with questions. So do I. And I really don't mind educating. I love to educate, actually. And I don't mind. So if anyone wants to contact me and ask me directly, they very well can. I have a way you can contact me through my website.
Let us know.
DrToomer.com. And that's TrDoomer.com. I will answer any question anyone throws at me, and I will happily do it.
All right, y'all. So y'all stop hitting me up. And and hit up Dr. Toomer directly.
and just so you know, I do know a whole lot more than just these medications. So
okay. Well, I appreciate you so much. I really, really do for taking the time.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to clarify some of my ideas on these it is a life-saving medication. So.
And it's a very.
And I hope that no one who needs it is scared of using it.
Listen, I had no idea this was going to be such a hot topic. when I started thinking about doing a show like this. I had no idea that this would be the hottest topic out of all the things that I've discussed. It's crazy, but it is. People are up and on.
Well, it is because it touches all of us in one way or another. And so, you know, I understand it either because of the disease state itself or because of family members or because of some way we've been touched by either disease or the medication or something. And then, you know, we're in a country where thinness is currency.
Right.
And what that is, what that means, though, especially for different populations, changes. It's cultural. So for one person, it may mean one thing, and for someone else, it may mean something totally different. And so it's this constant moving goalpost of what is expected.
Listen, our time is up. Yes. I appreciate you so much. And again, you said drtumor.com? Is that what it is?
Yes, drtoomer.com.
Awesome. We'll be in contact. And I'll be in contact with you because I'm going to have you back on another later. Hopefully not as soon. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye. Well, you know, I do feel better. I do understand better what Dr. Toomer is saying, and I'm so glad that she came back. I hope that you feel better, all of you people out there that were contacting me. I hope that you feel better about what she said and understand more fully what she's conveying to us as far as health and these drugs. So I know you hear the music. It means that it's time for the petty. So let's give him a call and see what he's talking about today. Listen, I gotta tell you, I feel so much better. I mean, I do. I think I understand what she's trying to tell me, trying to tell us. So I have much more clarity and I feel so much better. All right. But listen, I know you hear the music. That means it's time for only one person on this show, and that is the Petty. Let's give the Petty a call and see what's going on with him this week.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Petty. How you doing, brother?
A little under the weather, but I'm hanging in there.
Man, you got to stop burning the candles at both ends, young man.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? And you know, I hate a summer cold. And man, oh man, this one caught me by surprise. I'm telling you.
Yeah, everybody hates a summer cold, man. It's miserable.
Yeah, it is very miserable. I'm trying to fight through it. But I'm going to get right to this thing. Man, look, I don't know what's going on with the O's. They've been struggling a little bit. They now hold the third best record in baseball behind the Phillies in the National League. And the Cleveland Guardians hold the best record in the American League.
Wow. Wow.
And speaking of those former Indians, now Guardians, they are playing the Philadelphia Phillies this weekend. So that's pretty huge. You got the best in the American League and the best in the National League facing off head-to-head this weekend in Philadelphia.
It's interleague this weekend?
Yes, sir. It's interleague because the Orioles are playing the San Diego Padres.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they're not faring too well against them. So I don't know what's going on with those birds, but they still hold a slight lead in the American League East over those damn Yankees.
Right. Now, Machado's with the Padres, right?
Yes, he is.
Oh, so he's back home. Okay.
So, yeah, kind of sort of. So I hope they boo the heck out of him because he should have stuck around. No, I mean, he could have been the foundation of the team
right now.
You know, they were struggling. They were kind of on the rebuilding edge at that time. He won it out. And now look at where they are. Look at where the Orioles are. And look at where the Padres are.
You're right.
You know, and if you were to ask him now, where would you rather be? He'd probably rather be in Baltimore.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So, you know, it was kind of a little bit of a homecoming for him to come back and play in Camden Yards against his former team.
Right.
But, you know, I think he should have just stayed and stuck it out and, you know, been part of the turnaround.
Oh, I agree 100%.
I still expect them to make the playoffs. I'm talking about the Orioles. I still expect them to, you know, do well. And hopefully, like I said, we'll see that I-95 World Series between the O's and the Phillies this year.
Okay. All right. That'd be a good one.
As you know, the Paris Olympics are upon us, and the U.S. has already captured their first gold medal.
In what?
And that was the men's swim team captured the first gold medal for the United States. But, you know, swimming's fine. archery's fun and all the other stuff. It's track and field and basketball for me.
Yep, for me too.
You know what? I'm going to say gymnastics too.
Yep, me too.
And I got to tell you, I am not impressed with that basketball team that the U.S. is putting up right now. I mean, they have been just barely squeaking out some wins.
But that's the question I was going to ask you. I'm glad, you know, you're here today because I was going to ask you this very question. Is it that our talent isn't as good as what the Dream Team's talent was originally? Or has the world just gotten much better at the game of basketball?
It's a combination of both. And I don't think that the team that they're putting on the courts these days, and I'm talking about the NBA, and I've watched a couple of games. I don't watch it like I used to. They don't play that tough defense like they used to back in the 90s, the 80s, the 70s.
Right.
The NBA has gotten softer. And, you know, you and I touched on it a couple of weeks ago where we said they possibly have, you know, adopted some of the international rules and how they play.
Right.
Because it just seems awfully soft. And, yes, the world has caught up with the United States because there are a lot of teams that have players on their team representing their country who are NBA players.
Right, exactly.
You know, but to watch them struggle against South Sudan, to watch them struggle against Germany, I don't know if the gold medal is a thing, for, you know, is a gimme for them.
No, it's not. It's not.
And I watched some of the old clips, a classic thing from ESPN, the 92 Dream Team. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care what anyone says, no one can hold a candle to that team.
I agree.
I watched some of those games, and they were just blowing teams out.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of Hall of Famers that came off of that team, I mean, I think everybody that was on that team is almost is a Hall of Famer. So, I mean,
just about,
It's insane. Oh, yeah. That talent, no, there's no, there will never be talent assembled like that again, I don't think, on any team.
And you are absolutely right. You know, that's the greatest of all time. As far as men's basketball teams, them and the 1960 team that I never got a chance to witness, those two teams are probably the best U.S. teams that were ever put together. I'm not going to say take away from the 84 team either. But when you talk about the Dream Team, man, you're talking about a team, something that was special.
Right, right.
It was special. But you know what? It's July. It's the end of July. And you know the training camps have opened up. And, man, some teams already have some things going on that are not in their favor. And one of those teams is the San Francisco 49ers, who are tied as a favorite to go back to the Super Bowl along with the Kansas City Chiefs. They're talking about another game between, I mean, the odds have both of them at plus 600 as far as the teams that's going to be in the Super Bowl. And the 49ers have a problem right now. Brandon Ayuk, he wants an extension. He still has 1 year left on his contract, but he's kind of like holding in, meaning he's going to camp. He's going to the training camp. He's just not participating.
Right, right.
But there is a holdout, and this is huge for the 49ers. This guy has been considered as one of the best left tackles in football. And I'm talking about Trent Williams. He is holding out.
Is he really?
He's holding out because he wants his contract renegotiated.
Trent Williams is kind of long in the tooth now, though.
He's long in the tooth. He's in his 30s.
Right.
And here's the thing. He's under contract. He's got a good 3-year contract. But what he saw is that the 49ers gave Christian McCaffrey more money. And Christian McCaffrey was already under contract. So Trent said, well, hey, wait a minute. You can do it for him. Why not do it for me?
Right, right.
And they already got a problem with Brandon Ayuk, you know, because Brandon Ayuk wants $30 million.
Wow.
49ers are like standing at between 24 and 26. So there's a problem there.
Yeah, but is Brandon Ayuk... So remember when Debo hurt his shoulder?
Yes.
And he was out for all those games? I think he was out for three games.
Yes.
They lost all three games, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they did.
So,
yes, they did.
But when he came back, they won. So I'm wondering if Brandon Ayuk... is the guy worth is he worth $30 million if he can't step in when he needs to be stepped, you know, when he needs to step up?
It's not that he didn't step up. It's just that now you only have to focus on one guy without Debo in there. And okay. So they could double team and throw certain type of zones at Ayuk where it's like, okay, we have no one else because Debo's not here. And they're not worried about Debo. They're focusing just on him.
Okay. Who's on the other side when Debo's not there?
That's a good question. You got Juwan Jennings. They threw out a rookie last year. They threw out several players. And it's a whole different scenario. The offense is totally different when Debo's in there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And that opens up the field a little bit more for Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
So I think the best case scenario is for him is that go ahead, play out the last year of your contract. You will be a free agent next year. Now you really have in a stranglehold, but then again, you don't because they can put the franchise tag on you. And if they put the franchise tag on you, you will get paid. You'll get paid to average what the top five receivers are. So you'll get your money. But I understand wanting the extension now because if you get hurt, you know, going into free agency and you've been hurt in damaged goods, that hurts your chances of getting more money. So I do understand his position.
Right, right.
But I'm a strong advocate of just honoring your contract. Not to mention this part right here. They're going to be in salary cap hell next year, all of these salaries. They're going to restructure some contracts, mainly probably Fred Warner, Debo, and George Kittle. So they had some deep, you know what.
Yeah.
This season and going into next season. And then I'm really going to put the dagger right there where I wish I didn't have to. They're going to have to extend Brock Purdy next year. He is definitely going to be their franchise quarterback. And after what the Packers have done, the Packers extended Jordan Love 4 years, $22 million on his contract. So what has Jordan Love done? He's taken them to a champ. You know, he's taken them to a playoff game. He's turned that team around. He's making them forget about Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
But look what Brock Purdy has done in the 2 years that he has been with the 49ers. Two NFC championship games and a Super Bowl.
Right, right.
They're going to
pay him.
Tough for them next year. They're going to have to pay him.
Yeah.
You know. And he came back off a major injury to go to a Super Bowl. So they're definitely going to have to pay him.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's huge. That is huge. And one last thing, like I said, you know, it's that football time. And I know it's July. The season doesn't start until September, but the news is just flying. Tua got an extension. And the Jets signed another quarterback behind Aaron Rodgers. And he happens to be the MVP quarterback from the UFL championship team.
Really?
Yes, they did.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, so Adrian
Martinez, the UFL MVP quarterback, is now a Jet.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So, you know, you and I, we had talked about, players coming from the UFL and how they fared. Well, some players are now starting to sign with NFL teams.
Okay.
And the UFL did have their draft, and it's really nothing to talk about there because with no big names drafted out of college, it was just, guys who probably wouldn't make an NFL training, wouldn't even be in training camp. There are no big names out there right now. We'll probably have to look to find out who gets cut from some of these teams to find out who's going to go to UFL.
I was going
to
say,
next spring.
Yeah.
And even then, draft. And like I told you, it's no big fanfare behind it. So there's really not too much to talk about there.
Right. I got a question for you before you roll. What do you think of Bronny James being with the Lakers and being chosen where he was chosen? Do you think that even he was chosen, the second round?
Yes.
Even though he was chosen in the second round, do you think he's taking up a spot for somebody who might deserve it more? Do you think he deserves to be with the Lakers based on his numbers?
That's a tough question. To be honest with you, I think he's trash. I think that another spot, someone else should have been given that spot. But, you know, his father is, and that's why the Lakers chose him. But really, as a second-round pick, what do the Lakers really have to lose?
No, you're right.
You know what I mean? Do I think it's a roster spot that should have gone to someone else? Yes, I do. But they really don't have anything to use by, you know, using that pick on for him. I know LeBron wants to play with his son. We probably won't see it until late in the season. And, you know, watching some of the summer league games, and there are some flashes there, but for the most part, I think it's trash.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
We'll see how that pans out in the future.
Okay. Okay.
So that's really all I have for you today. Next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about your Ravens as they go into their training camp.
I'm psyched about them, Catch. I'm psyched. I can't wait.
Well, I'm glad you are, because you know what I think. They'll be the bum birds that they are
whatever,
every
man.
Season. On that note, I got to get out of there.
All right, brother. Feel better, bro.
Peace.
All right.
Thank you very much. Peace.
All right, well, we've come to the end of an hour, a little bit more. We've gone over again. I apologize. But I am so happy and appreciative that Dr. Toomer was willing to come back and explain to us exactly what she meant. I hope you feel better about it like I do. Also, want to thank the Petty for being here. He was a little under the weather. He didn't have to do it, but he did it anyway because he's a soldier, and I really appreciate him. And, of course, I appreciate you giving me your hour today. You didn't have to, but you tuned in anyway, and I really appreciate that. Listen, if you miss any portion of the show, or if you want to listen to the show again or have someone else hear the show that missed it, you can always go to my website at voiceswired.com. I have all of my shows listed there from newest to oldest. I hope you enjoy them. And also, if you have any feedback or any comments about the show today, you can always get with me at On with Brian Pettaway on Instagram. I'd love to hear your feedback. Your feedbacks and comments and advice about who to have on the show or what topics has really helped the show grow. So please continue to hit me up with those. And listen, that's it for me today. I want you guys to relax today. Do absolutely nothing. Because like I say every week, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. Be ready to go tomorrow morning, wake up fueled and ready to inspire people and leaving yourself open to being inspired. Next week, I'll have a brand new show for you right here on 1500 Radio, Baltimore's authentic multimedia experience. Have a great week, people. Peace.